I kind of had a choice at that point.
Not just being patient with the process, but being grateful with the process.
And I'm like, man, I went to my dad straight after the game. I'm like, yo, like this shit can't happen anymore, man. I always try to take the good out of any negative situation.
You know, I have players coming in, Xavier, and they'd be like, you know, I played so bad. You know, sometimes I'd be like, hey, bro, hey, I don't know, we can't do nothing about that. I can tell you what we can do, we can get some work in right now.
Like, if you're not doing plyometrics, you're losing out on a lot of potential for performance.
My dad had these tapes of the Laker game. I got to a point where I said, you know, I want to play basketball. And I just always wanted to make sure I had the edge over people.
It became a part of me, you know, I didn't want anybody to get to be better than me.
This episode is brought to you by Whoop. Whoop is the only 24/7 wearable technology that measures the everyday stressors both inside and outside of work and training. Whoop measures the physiological data related to sleep, including the quality, duration, and consistency of sleep, strain, which is the internal load from external stress, and recovery, which is the readiness to perform. Whoop uses these three key metrics to call out areas for improvements and reinforce positive habits. If you're looking to join the team, use my discount code BBALL at checkout or just click the link in my description to get a free 30-day trial with Whoop. Come join the team. Let's level up together.
Welcome back to another episode of the Basketball and Barbells podcast. This is actually the first episode where I have someone returning back. He's actually the first guest actually on the podcast. I actually looked back and I didn't realize it, but my guy Bossy is back. Bossy, thank you so much for coming back on. If you haven't listened to the first episode, if you haven't listened to the first episode, go catch up. But Bossy, man, I appreciate you for coming back on.
Yeah, you're welcome. And you definitely got to start this episode with 1, 2, 3, and then me saying go.
I know. I'm gonna keep all that in. Man, no, but thank you again, man. I just want to tell everybody, like, literally, Bossy was the first guest. It's even our story was pretty funny. Go listen to the episode so you can catch up. But I was telling somebody recently, like, yeah, man, I drove like 90 minutes to go meet with Bossy. And, you know, we just had a conversation. I drove 90 minutes back. And I was like, that was the best investment I ever made. And for you, it was just like, it was just easy. It was just like, oh, this person needs help.
Yeah, and it was, when you messaged me, the thing was, and I think I didn't talk about that in our first podcast. So I'm telling Yulia, I'm like, hey, Yulia, like, there's a guy from Orlando. He's training people and he kind of like wants to be strength coach or basketball coach. And he's willing to come to Tampa to watch me and Aaron work. I'm like, can you imagine that? He's coming to watch me work, like, really? And she's like getting excited, and I'm like, okay, sure. The door is open, you can come and see, you can ask me questions, doesn't matter.
I
remember that was the day, yeah, that was the day when Aaron, I think our ball was flat and he didn't have a nipple. He had a pump and he didn't have a nipple, and he was kind of like, he was hesitating and he was mad. He's like, man, I'm not working. I'm like, no, come on, we're training, you just got to get the nipple. And I think he went to the store to get the nipple, and I'm like, and the whole workout he was looking mad, and I'm like, oh man, Xavier drove 1.5 hour or so and he's watched that workout, like one of the shortest ones and one of the ones when Aaron is literally not that person who was trying to talk.
Man, it was, I remember that. Yeah, he didn't have the nipples, like the needle, and he had to go to the store and get it. And I think we talked in between, though, but yeah, it was, I didn't think any of that. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I was just happy to be there. I'm like, oh, this is dope. I'm like, I don't care. I'll wait here for, you know, however long. I didn't care, but it's funny you bring that up because I totally forgot about that. I remember now. Got you. I want to touch on a little bit. I know you've been doing some stuff on, you know, lately, like Instagram. I know we touched on this before, some challenges with that now. But before we get to the challenges, like some of the stuff you have been doing since we had our first podcast, you've been doing some talks with coaches. You've been doing some lives. Misha, my guy Misha, I got to get back in touch with him. But, you know, what have you been up to lately on Instagram? And, like, you know, what are some of the stuff that you had, you know, planned out, so, you know.
I told you that I wanted to talk about it, but I think that's going to be interesting. That's going to be surprising for you to hear why I want to talk about it. So for the whole week, I didn't have access to Instagram, and I still don't have it. And so I've been messaging and emailing Instagram for like 15, 20 times a day. And it just got me to, mentally, it just got me to a point where I imagine it's me being back to Russia when I'm trying to get to college in the States, when I'm messaging 100 different coaches every week, or 1,500 different coaches within the 3-4 months. So where I'm really just trying to get in touch with anybody to find someone who may be interested in me. In that situation, when I don't have the access to Instagram, just reminded me of that. And so when I'm talking to players and I'm telling them, okay, that's your goal. You want to play in, let's say, in VTB, EuroLeague, or you want to play in NBA, you have to do this and this and this, and you have to keep going until you reach your goal. And while, as soon as you reach the goal, just find the next one. Of course, you can enjoy that win, but make sure you find the next goal that will keep driving you. And so here, me losing the access, this is kind of like that one goal outside of the court that I have to accomplish. So I'm looking at it not as something where I'm like, oh man, it sucks, I don't have access, I have to do this and that. I'm thinking just the opposite. I'm thinking, okay, that's a challenge, that's an opportunity. I tried everything that I could think of, it didn't work. But then maybe there's something I haven't thought about it. So I got to get my critical thinking going. And so I just wanted people to understand that the situations when you're talking about following your goals is not necessarily meaning about your big goal when you want to play in the NBA in 5 years, or you want to be a strength coach in NFL in 5 years. It's about little details too. It's about waking up early, or going to grocery store every 2 days, or I don't know, even leaving all the garbage every morning. Just some simple details, some small details, not necessarily something that goes to your career as a player or as a coach or whoever.
Right. It's like the process of it. I think a lot of people get lost in that. They just get, you know, the goal, like, oh, I just, you know, like you said, I just want to be a strength coach and, you know, NBA or whatever. But like you said, it's the details, the process. And I tell all my players, I'm like, hey, look, our goal is X, Y, and Z, but to get there, we got to do everything in between. So it's like, you got to fall in love with the process, the little things day in and day out. You know, that's why I love Kobe so much, is because he never missed anything. Every story I hear about Kobe is like how obsessive he was over the little things. But yeah, it's like you said, I think people, don't get me wrong, like, you got to focus on the goal. Like, the goal has got to be the goal, but the process is more important. Once you get into that habit of just following your process and your routine, then you're going to hit the goal. But I think, you know, you can't climb a mountain just by taking one giant step. Like, you got to take all the thousand steps in between.
Yep. And it's at the same time, if you can focus on the moment, that's also will be very big. And I actually had a talk a couple of hours ago with one of the players I worked with, and he's like telling me, we talk about the goals, where he wants to see himself in a couple of years or in a year. And he said, oh man, I can't wait to be there. I just want to be there so bad. I want to experience it as soon as possible. And I'm just telling him, I understand what you're talking about, but there's going to be time, maybe 2 years after, where you'll be thinking, oh man, that time 2 years ago, it was so fun. So I'm telling him, try not to rush the time and think about where you are now. Find the way how you can enjoy that moment and take the most of it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's like, you can't, I think people, like you said, they just get lost in it. It's like, well, the only moment we have right now is literally right now. Like, we don't, obviously we can plan for the future, but who knows what's going to happen. Like, God forbid something happens in between where, you know, maybe we have to change course, or maybe the goal's got to change. So like you said, like, plan for that, but you got to live in the moment and you got to make the most of it. And I think, especially younger players, not even younger players, I think just people in general, but especially the younger players like that I'm working with that are like in high school, even in college, like they're just like go, go, go. And I'm like, whoa, buddy, like let's take a second. Let's focus out today. And they're like talking about, hey, when I can start dunking. I'm like, well, first, let's make sure that, you know, you can properly get into a lunge position, because right now this is looking bad. Like if you dunk right now, you're probably going to get hurt. And again, like you said, you got to focus on the now instead of just thinking about what's going on, in the, you know, in the future. But yeah, one thing I wanted to touch on too is just even when it comes with some of that goal setting, I get a lot of questions about training in season. And obviously you do both sides, where you do the skill side and you do the strength and conditioning side. For those who don't know, I watch a lot of bossy stuff. I feel a lot of stuff from you. I don't tell you all the time, but I'll just kind of go through your page, and obviously like we'll have conversations, but some of the stuff you put out there, I'm just kind of like, man, how the hell did he come up with this? But it's all based off sound fundamentals. But I'm always checking your stuff. But I wanted to ask you about the in-season training. When you do have a player that is in season, especially overseas, what are some principles that you follow to help train them, keep them in, not only just in shape during the season, strength and conditioning wise, but also make sure they don't overtrain on the skill side? Like, what are some things that you maybe have lined up to make sure that you're taking care of the player?
So first of all, at least now I know who's that first person who's saving all my posts or who's messaging or forwarding all my posts. I'm thinking, man, there's so many. Who's that one? You probably just have like a number of accounts where you do it.
Like three or four, man.
Yeah. I gotta check our basketball and barbells profile to make sure that all my posts are sitting there too.
You could be shocked, but, man.
Yeah. Yeah, if we're talking about in-season training, and let's say we talk strength training. So first of all, I want to know what's the age of the player. If that's someone who's in between 16 and 20, and first thing I'll ask is, okay, so that's important for me to know what the volume the player already has with the team, because I'm the supplement. So if we're talking about basketball training as the main training, the basketball team training, then strength training on team setting is number two, is the supplement already. And me, what I'm doing, individual work, since right now I'm not hired by a club, I'm working independently, then my work is supplement number two. So in priorities, it's ideally, it's like number three. And so before I give something out, I got to make sure I consider the volume that has been there already. And so if I know that a player has lifted yesterday and he'll be lifting tomorrow with the team, and he had two practices yesterday and he had one today and again two tomorrow, then there's no point for me to work on kind of like muscle hypertrophy with high volume. I'll try to reduce the volume. But if we speak as something like, I would say as a rule of thumb, what I usually do with players in season, especially with young players in season, is strength training. And the volume will be, if we just talk general, it will probably be around 6 to 8 exercises split up into supersets of two or ideally three, where one of those three will definitely be core in different planes of motion. And the number of reps will be in between 5 or 6 or 4 or 7. I like an orthodox numbers like 7, 4. I like 7 more though.
Yeah, I was saying, you see a lot of like reps that come out to like 7. Usually it's like, you know, even number 6, 8, maybe 10. Like, yeah. I've been doing that with 9 reps.
Yeah, 7, 9 is something that I like too. So that's the basic rule. And also, plus me knowing that most of the young teams, if we take Russia, most of them are training kind of like for either hypertrophy or endurance. They'll do like high reps. They'll do maybe 10, maybe 12 reps. And so I understand that the load is not that big. So they're doing maybe 40% of 1 RM. Just so low weight, and then me thinking, okay, you're in season, you're running a lot, and you're working on pretty much the same qualities in the weight room, that means you're just staying at the same spot. So that's the reason why we focus on strength. And if I have someone for, let's say, 2 months at least, where I see him or her for at least 2 days a week, or ideally 4 days a week, then it's going to be 75% focus on strength and 25% on power, where we'll be like really low volume, where it's going to be maybe only like 25 minutes, just quick work, where I'll make sure that we touch that nervous system, but it's not at a point where the player is kind of like getting tired and exhausted.
Right, right. That's, and that's one thing I see a lot of, or like, I'll say mistakes that especially players, they may not have the guidance, but they'll, I mean, you touched on like, you're mainly focusing on the strength side. You're going to tap into that nervous system because, you know, in basketball, especially like when they're in season and they got high minute players, right? They're going to be on that court. Like they're going to get a lot of those plyos, a lot of that power development, but you still have to tap into it, right? In order to maintain it. But I see a lot of players that come to me and like, they're like, man, like I'm playing like, you know, X amount of minutes. I'm practicing, you know, 5-6 days out of the week, got games. And then they're still going in and trying to get even, you know, bouncier, more explosive. Like I always, for me personally, I say, hey, let's maintain, keep you healthy in the season. And then the off season, let's make those improvements. But I think even you kind of touched on it, so I'm going to just ask, but do you feel like the season would be appropriate time to try to develop even more, you know, I guess, explosiveness? Or would that be kind of like more so just focused on, hey, let's just keep you healthy, maintain, and then we'll move from there?
I would say, yeah, you can at least. So if we're talking about explosiveness and, you know, if we touch when you say explosiveness, most people think about the vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And so if let's say we talk about the vertical, then here, the main thing I would start working on before we touch the explosiveness as a quality, I would work on just simple mechanics, simple jumping mechanics, because I see that not that many basketball players are really able to use their arms, not really able to utilize the arm swing when they jump in. And so people can really benefit from it. So that's number one. Number two is if we're talking about jumping with the ball, let's say finishing the layup, or you're trying to dunk, then here, how you pick the ball up is also important. So I'm trying first maybe 2 weeks or maybe first 4 or 5 sessions, I'm trying to talk about these details, try to see how I can teach the players better, how I can make sure they progress without putting extra stress on their nervous system.
Right, right. That's actually a really good point, just like in terms of like the vertical jump, but just jump mechanics. Like it's, you know, it's so simple, and it's at the end of the day, like, you know, you're not stressing the body. Like, you know, if you're in the weight room, maybe going into like some Olympic lifting, you know, it can be lower intensity, but again, like it's just like low hanging fruit. Like, you know, it's like a runner, right? Like you're teaching someone how to run. The first day you get anyone ever to run, it looks ugly. It just looks terrible, right? Mm-hmm. But over time, as they get better and better, their economy gets better, right? Like the form just improves, and because of that, that's how they get faster. So sometimes, like you said, it's not even about just the physical development, but it's just about cleaning up the mechanics, because now there's no wasted motion, no wasted energy. That's actually really low hanging fruit. Like, I'm glad you pointed that out, because I know like I work on it. I know obviously you work on it, but just even like just expressing like, hey, like power development, jump mechanics. Like, I've never heard anyone actually say that before.
Yep. Yep. Hey, the first one.
You heard it here first. Oh, yeah. Bossy touched on that first before anyone else.
And, you know, to me, that's also important that the coach understands that too. Just so you also not just understand how to use the arms when you jump in, but you're also able to demonstrate. Because I've seen coaches who are not that athletic and who are not able to jump. And then whenever the player is thinking, okay, how should I jump? If the coach can't demonstrate that as a strength coach, maybe the player won't be able to understand, because what I experience now is most of the young generation, they are visual learners. And so if I'm showing something to them just by myself, just like going slow with the ball, or saying, okay, you got to do this and this and that, most of the times they have that, they just look at me like, what? And I'm like, okay, let me show full speed. And then if no, I'm like, okay, let me just find the example online that I can show on my phone. And whenever they see it on the phone, they're like, oh, okay, I got it. Okay, okay, you should have shown it to me earlier. And I'm like, oh man. And so now if you as a coach know that most of the players, most of the athletes and the young generation are more visual learners, then you got to take advantage of it, and you got to train as well, just so you can show the players right away and they can be like, oh, okay, makes sense. Yeah, our coach knows how to do it. He's not just talking about it.
Yeah, I think it adds to the buy-in too, right? Like if a player sees you demonstrate it, like, you know, at an adequate or even high level, it's like, oh, you know, like you said, sometimes I have players, like I may break it down perfectly and it's just like, okay, cool. Like I know I coached this up and it's still wrong. And I'm like, hey, just watch me. And you just do it one time, two times, and they're like, oh, and it's like, they just pick it up, right? Like, so it's to a point now where I may even just like demonstrate, depending on the level of player, I might just demonstrate it and not use too many words, and they may just pick it up perfectly, right? And like the lower, I've noticed like the lower levels or the athletes that may not be as visual, right? Like the more you have to kind of break it down, like the slower the learning process is, because I feel like when it's more instinctual, you don't have to think about it, right? Instincts you have to teach, but when you actually have to teach and break it down, like now it has to go from conscious to subconscious, and like that takes time. So that's actually a really good point. Do you, I was gonna ask, when you communicate these things with the coaches and obviously the coaching staff, like some of the stuff that you're doing, you know, are you able to communicate with every player's coach and trainer and their entire staff, or is it kind of like sometimes you just gotta go with what the player tells you?
I'll tell you more. So most of the times I'll try not to communicate with the coach, and I'll try to make sure that the head coach does not know that the player worked with me or he's seen me in the gym. Because that's the thing that that happens in Russia particularly, that sometimes the coaches are not big fans of the extra work their players may do with somebody outside of the team, because they think that the coach who's not on the team, I'm not saying he's not good enough, but he may be telling the player, oh, you're so good. Oh, it's just the coach does not like you. He doesn't appreciate you. Or I'll be saying, okay, you got to shoot every time you touch the ball, you got to shoot it. Every time, shoot it, just like hot potato, shoot it. And so I think because of that, coaches, they are usually against it. And so unless I have good relationships with the coach, and there's still some, I can definitely tell there are still some coaches like that, that are okay. And whenever I see that the coach is okay, whenever I feel and I get the references about the coach, and if I don't know him personally, I'll get the references. And if the references are positive, and they say, yeah, the coach is pretty open-minded, he's easygoing, he definitely will be able to talk about it with you, about the training, about what I need. If I get that reference, then I'll definitely get in touch with the coach. But if I hear that the coach is kind of like, I forgot the word, and that's what happens when you know a couple of languages, you're not perfect in any of them. You keep forgetting.
Flex.
So yeah, if you know that the coach is kind of like wants to control it all and wants to have all the power, then I'm thinking, okay, if I ask the coach what we should do with this player or what's his opinion, then maybe we'll hurt the player, where one, he won't allow the player to go and work with me, and two, he can bench him, three, he can fine him, and four, he can suspend him at some point. And so me knowing that, me understanding all the consequences that may happen, I'm just trying to be as useful as possible for the players. And if that means nobody will know that we worked out, then we got to make it happen. Or if that's the coach who's really open-minded and who'll be able to give me as much insight as possible, then I'll definitely get in touch with him.
So two key points out of what you just said. One, you flex on us by saying you know multiple languages. And then two, you said you got haters, basically. That's what I got out of that.
No, I wouldn't say it like that. It's not personally to me personally. It's just to anybody who will do something with the coach, with that player.
Oh, no.
That's a stereotype. That's a stereotype, and that's the difference in between Russia and the U.S. and in between the coaching. Just because I still remember that moment when Demetrius Jackson signed Exhibit 10 with the Lakers, and he was with them for the training camp, and he also stayed for preseason games. And me trying to I have good relationships with DJ, and I'm really willing to help him as much as I can. And at that point, it was just like I was trying to do whatever I could because I saw how hard he worked in China. And so when he got the opportunity with the Lakers, I knew man, I'm not trying to be like a stepping stone. But if there is something I can do, I'll just do it for him for sure. And so the first thing I knew when I knew that he's playing and he has played two games already, the first thing I did, I just messaged Coach Handy. And I'm like, Coach Phil Handy. And I just asked Coach Handy, what do you think, what should Demetrius work on? Because I've been working with him when he was in China. And then I came to Indiana during the off season for a week. And so now I understand that he's not the top player, the main player on the team. And I'm just willing to do whatever it takes. I'll just do the video breakdowns for him. Can you tell me, please, what should I look for just to make sure what I'm saying does not go against what you're trying to do as a team? And he just gave me, he wrote a huge message there explaining, we want to see this and this and this. I think he should work on this and that and pay attention to this. And I'm like, oh, wow, man. I'm like, thank you very much. And that was really helpful. And so this just gives me a different perspective on how you care about players' progress and how you care about players reaching their goals.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. I think in my experience, when I had great relationships with, some of the coaching staff with some of these players, obviously I work more on the strength and conditioning side, and then I have the skills mm-hmm. trainers where I'll just sit down and say, hey, they'll ask me, hey, what are you doing with this player? What do you think they need? You know, I'll say, hey, this is what I see, X, Y, and Z. And then okay, I want to do X, Y, and Z with them on the court, how can we make this work? And that's when I really saw the players benefit the most, because now we have the most, we both care about, this player's health and well-being. Yeah. And that's when you see them take it to the next level. In my personal experience too, when it's kind of, you don't have that communication, it almost feels like I'm kind of guessing and checking, where I'm kind of like, hey, what are you doing with the team? What are you doing? And sometimes the players, they're not able to communicate it because one, they may not remember, or two, they may not really know themselves, what they're doing and what they're, the intensity, all that stuff. So it makes it challenging on my end, but I agree with what you're saying. I think once you get to that place where you're working with a coaching staff that has that open mind, like you're talking about, that's when you really see the environment, the culture, you really see the environment of the team that they can really prosper in. But it's just super difficult when you got to basically kind of wait in the shadows and kind of peek around, and it's almost like you're trying to figure out how you can help this player.
Yeah, but that's an interesting challenge, and I don't want to say I love it, but I enjoy it. Of course, that would be much more beneficial if we could do it pretty openly. But if no, that's something that I really enjoy.
That's why you're the GOAT. Because, that's why you're the GOAT.
Yeah, because now you know, if the player really wants to put the work in, if he really wants to get to his goal. And last season I had one of the big men, he played in VTB and he's 7'2". He's already, at that point, he was 31 already. So he was not that young, but he was the type of person who was ready to do all the extra work in the world before practice, after practice, early mornings, whatever time you call him, he'll be on. And he's 31, he has a wife, he has a dog, he has just like, he has a lot of stuff to do. And his coach was, he was like very strict. He's like the strictest, I would say. And so if he knows that, if he will figure out that the player did the extra work with somebody, then he'll have big problems. I mean, the player. And so this, just those 4 months that we lived in the same city, just gave me a whole different perspective on how much that player is willing to work and how much he's still willing to improve while he's 31. Because we worked in his apartment. We worked in the forest, like 80 miles away from the city, just to make sure nobody sees us. We went to gyms that would be, I wouldn't say like 20 miles outside of the city, just like the gyms nobody would know of. And all that would be 5:30 a.m., 6 a.m., 6:30. Sometimes we would go and lift after games. It would be like 10 p.m. Just like we would do different stuff where you're thinking, oh man, if he's doing that, then he's really committed. Then he's really willing to get to his goal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure, man. Actually, you kind of touched on something I've been talking to a couple coaches about too, is even just like the post-game list. Like, I want to touch on that a little bit. Like, whenever you go into a post-game lift, it's going to be different with different players, but, you know, generally, like, what are you looking for to get out of that session, especially after a game, maybe with high-minute players and maybe lower-minute players? You know, what are some things you're looking for with that post-game lift?
To be honest, the high-minute players, the only time I experienced that was when I was with AJ, with Aaron Jackson in China. And we would do just something more. It was more of like a cool down where we do a little bit of core work and a little bit of mobility. He had tight hips, and so we would work on hip mobility more. And that's pretty much it. And I'll just ask him what bothers him at that point after the game. And then whatever his response is, I'll make sure we'll spend a little bit more time on that, meaning either myofascial release or working on mobility, just something like that. So it will be less strength, less like work with the weights, more of some small work. And if we say, let's say it's someone who's playing low minutes, then number one thing I would try to do more before game, because I would want that pre-game lift, I would want it to be like an energizer for a player where he feeling that he has rockets in his legs. So he has two rockets instead of two legs, where his core muscle, where his core is just like bulletproof, and where he's able to punch whoever gets in front of him. And so that's the goal of the training session. And if that's after, then I would just try to kind of like mimic the what he would do on court, meaning running, change of directions, all that. So I would say like all that agility work, and I would try to keep it simple instead of going like with the ladders, just because in games there won't be ladders, but there will be quick changes of directions. So we may be changing directions in like triangle shape or square shape, just whatever I'll have in my mind in that day, or whatever I'll have notes on during that game. So during the game, I usually take notes. I usually take notes on the just like simple shot chart. And besides that, it can be what move player feels comfortable with, what move feels natural. And sometimes if I see that you're doing something naturally, I'll try to spend more time on it during practices. maybe not even talking a lot about the details, but just making sure we'll polish that. And you know how you're feeling smooth with that move. And so it would be more, if we go back to after game lift, it will be one sprint change of direction that will be similar to basketball game, and two will be definitely combined with some core work. And I'll try to mix it up where it won't be like sprints for 10 minutes and then core for 10 minutes, but I'll try to mix it where that will be alternating, running quick core, something like, let's say if running is going in transition defense, playing defense, running on O, and then core is more of offense where you're, let's say that's big man, where you're big man who is trying to get a position in the post and then trying to get their rebound, fighting for the spot. And then you're done with the core work. That's again, running, sprinting, change of directions. That's your transition D, defense and transition offense. And then again, core, fighting for the spot, getting that rebound.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think even, like you said, just mixing it up, because, I mean, we kind of touched on this a little bit, but just, like, the mentality, like, or the mental space of the athlete, too. Like, one thing I like about you, and this is actually a good segue, is you make the training, obviously, it's, like, foundational. It's like, wow, like, this is dope. But at the same time, like, it just looks fun, right? Like, you make the training look fun, and I'm just like, it almost looks like, man, that would be, like, an enjoyable session with Bossy. So I kind of want to talk about that. Like, you touched on this before we were talking, but like, what are some things you kind of do to, you know, not just make it fun where it's just because we got to work, but what are some things you kind of make it interesting for the athletes, and like, you can kind of stimulate them and keep them engaged in the session, and it doesn't feel like to the point where it's okay, here's another session and they're kind of just checked out.
Mm-hmm. So I would just touch on two things. Number one is why it's like that. Why I'm training like that, and it's simple because when I was willing to play professionally, when I wanted to go and play in college, there was no coach who would spend a lot of extra time with me in the gym, so that would be funny. But my dad was trying to help me fix the jump shot, even though he played hockey. He never played basketball. I still remember I would show him like a picture of Gilbert Arenas, and I'm like, okay, dad, so that's how it needs to be. That's how I need to shoot when I'm raising the ball here. Can you tell me if that's like, if it is something similar? And he would look at me while I've stopped. He looked at the picture of Gilbert Arenas. He's like, yeah, that's kind of like that. And I'm like, man, I'm thinking about it now. I'm like, man, like, really? And so all the work that I did was, I want to say kind of like boring one, where I would just simply get tired. And so now I realize that it didn't stop me from working, but one thing that could definitely be added was more kind of like, just like you said, more interesting training. And so now me working with the players, I'm trying to make sure it's one, useful, and two, is still keeping it fresh, where players need to think more instead of doing something automatically. And that would basically come to your initial question. And here is just, I have a thought in my mind. I had it after one of the workouts that I had today, because I knew we'd do the podcast. And I'm like, man, I got to talk about that for sure. So I'm working with 10-year-old kid. And he simply, instead of doing kind of like predetermined moves, so we work on simple stuff like shooting on a catch, shooting off the curl where you only have two steps, like one, two, and pull up, shooting off one dribble. And then at the end, it's kind of like when I want to work more on his handles, where he just has the rhythm. One thing I would tell him is, okay, you start at the 3-point line, you have five dribbles, you do whatever you want to do, and you pull up. And you have to make two in a row. One got to be a pull-up. Second one has to be a floater, or you can mix it up. Doesn't matter. But it has to be alternating. And then he starts. And whenever he starts, I see, like, you know, when you tell five dribbles, do whatever you want, you see that imagination in his eyes, like, oh, man, what am I doing? Okay, I did this and this and that. And then as I see, let's say we get through one spot where a player needs to make two in a row, three times. We'll go to any other spot. Maybe just change the angle a little bit. Next thing I may say, okay, you got to finish it up with the last dribble has to be through the legs. And then player will have to figure it out. Okay, I'm doing this and this and this, and the last dribble will have to be through the legs. And then next spot it can be, okay, you have to use double behind the back. And then the whole combinations on your none of the combinations should repeat, but two of those out of those five dribbles, two have to be double behind the back. And it's just, I didn't really add nothing. We're still doing the same simple moves, but the player just has to think, because if you did cross, cross, behind the back, cross, then next time you're like, okay, I got to do something different. And then it's just your mind starts thinking, your mind starts working. And then when you don't have no defense in front of you and you're just doing it like a robot, it's just a different feeling compared to the game. But whenever your mind is, I don't want to say running, but whenever you're thinking about, okay, what do you got to do, or trying to figure out your next move, this is something not exactly the same, but this is something similar that may happen in a game where you're coming off the screen and you see the big man coming, and in your head is like, okay, making a pass, checking the corner, pulling it up, driving, finding the contact. And that's the same thing, you on the move trying to figure it out, okay, behind the back or through the legs. Just decisions are different, but they're still decisions and you have to make them.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's it's funny because, like, we kind of talked about that earlier, but if you look at basketball, any sport, it doesn't really matter about basketball, but especially in basketball, like, you got a lot of choices you got to make. So it's not like, you know, and one thing I spoke about with Gannon too, when I had him on here like about a year ago, but he always says, like, hey, like, you can't be a robot. You got to be able to have options and make decisions based on that option.
Exactly.
Like, when you're coming off a pick and roll, it's, you know, there's multiple options out of that. Like, even the defense, like, they have options. Like, there's no one way, set way to do anything. So like you said, you got to be able to make a decision. And the thing is, those decisions in the game, they happen so fast that if you can't do it on 1-on-0, there's no way you can do it. When you're in the middle of a game, you have a coach yelling at you, your teammates may not know the play, they're running all over the place, the defense is trying to trap you, they're trying to stop you from whatever it is, you know, the play that you're trying to run. And you got to make a decision quick. And all this is happening within a split second. And then you go into training, like you talk about, and if you're not getting creative and you're not being open and imaginative, like, you're going to get in a position where you've only trained blocked training. You've only gone between the legs, through the back, you know, all that stuff, but very robotic. So now when you're in a situation where they're about to double team you, like, you don't have the imagination, like, oh crap, I got to get out of here. I got to get this, either the ball out of my hands or I got to get out of this trap. And again, like you said, like, you got to be able to make that decision. So I think there's a good amount of block training. Like, you got to make sure, like, yeah, you got to get your reps in of just practicing. But then you also got to get both sides where you're getting the part, okay, cool, let's freestyle. Because I don't think Kyrie Irving, when he comes in, I think he's the best ball handler in the game. I think he's one of the best point guards. But when he comes in the game, like, he's not planning on, when he comes off his pick and roll, he's going to do this. Like, he's dictating the offense. But at the same time, like, if he gets surprised, he's not really surprised. He's like, oh, crap, let me just get out of this really quick. And I think that's exactly what you're touching on, making those quick decisions.
Yep.
For sure, man. All right, Bossy, I want to touch on one last thing before we start to wrap up. I know we've been going off strong for about 30, 40 minutes now, but I wanted to touch on just, like, some of the plans that you had maybe coming up. Obviously, we have some stuff planned coming out with the Academy, but what are some stuff you have planned, obviously, like, with the world starting to open up a little bit more? If you got to keep it on hush, that's cool. But what are some stuff that, or maybe some ideas that you had kind of set up for the future that you have maybe the next couple months?
That's interesting. I mean, pretty much the same that I've been doing the whole this season, trying to help all the players that I'm working with, trying to help them reach their goals this season, no matter what the goals are. And so just the number of the players that I'm working with now is just, it's pretty big. There are more than 20 players that I'm trying to help even during the season, even though we're not in the same city, or I would even say more than third. So there are plenty of leagues that I got to watch. And since the playoff time is coming, then it's kind of like a call for me where I have to do a little bit more work to make sure every one of them is progressing even more than he or her was before. And so that's number one goal.
Right. Absolutely, man. Bossy, man, I appreciate you for coming back on here, especially with, you know, obviously the time difference. I don't, what time is it over there?
8:30 PM.
Okay. Okay. Not too bad. Not too bad. But I appreciate you even setting this up, man. Definitely can't wait to definitely start putting out more content for the Academy. Definitely going to have that going on in the spring of this year. But anytime you want to hop on, man, please let me know, because people love when you come on the podcast. Like, anytime we do anything together, people are just like messaging me, like, man, Bossy, like,
I hope so.
They're like, man, Bossy's post, like, what do you think about this? And I'm like, yeah, that's dope. Hell yeah, I'm taking that. We talked about, I'm gonna save it. But Bossy, man, I appreciate you for coming out, man, and just spending this time giving all this free game out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my pleasure, Xavier. Are you serious, though? People are saying like that?
Oh, yeah. They share your stuff with me. Obviously, they know, like, obviously, like, we're, you know, friends and we've worked together, but they'll come out and share some stuff. Like, hey, like, how would you incorporate this? Or, you know, just, like, thoughts on this. And it's interesting because sometimes it'll be posts I haven't seen. I'm like, damn, how far did you scroll back to see that? Like, but yes, yeah.
Means I'm moving in the right direction. Just gotta keep going.
Right, right. And remember, all those saves, just know I'm the first one, man.
Yes, sir.
All right,
but bye. Yeah, as far as our academy, I'm really excited. I know it has taken a while, and we were planning to do it in January.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the one thing that I like is the mindset that you have, and we're pretty similar in that you wouldn't want it to start, you wouldn't want it to start it in late January just because you wanted to start it late January. You would rather postpone it for 2 months, but make sure it's prepared. And I'm the same way. I don't want to give out something that I don't think is high quality. Instead, I would rather spend a little bit more time preparing it for it silently, and then just so people can check it, enjoy, and find the use.
Right. At the end of the day, man, is I'd rather have the, like you said, the quality over the quantity, because we could just put something out in January, you know, and like, okay, called it a day. But I was kind of thinking to myself, you know what, I'm not trying to rush this. I know you weren't trying to rush it. So yeah, I mean, end of the day, I get people messaging me about that. Like, hey, man, when's the Academy dropping? I'm like, hey, like, you know, I'm working on behind the scenes. We're both working on it. We want to make sure it's good before we even put it out. Like, we're not going to, you know, put out shit. Pretty much. We're not going to put out crap.
Yeah, agree with that.
For sure, man. Well, Bossy, thank you again, man. Anytime you want to hop back on, let me know. And I'd love to have you, man.
Yes, sir. And so for people who are listening, make sure you check all the previous Xavier's episodes. He has plenty. And if you want to follow him, make sure you follow him at The Sports Geek on Instagram.
Hey, I appreciate the shout out, man. For those under a rock, you gotta listen to it. Please go check out the first episode of Bossy. We definitely talked about his story, how we met, and he's got a crazy interesting story. The funniest part was just the part about you sending Facebook messages, like, I don't think the coaches got it. I don't think they got the message. Let me send it again. But great story. And go follow him on Bossy Pro. I'm probably sharing a lot of his stuff anyway. He can't see it right now, but I'm probably sharing a lot of his stuff right now.
And you know, one thing also, when you said go check the first episode, one thing I have, one of my rules is whoever invites me to speak for a podcast, I'm trying to make sure that every time I'm on the podcast, I'm speaking about something different, just so at least 50% or at least 40% of the stuff that I'm talking about is not something that you heard in a previous podcast. And so now when you said his story is pretty interesting, I'm thinking, oh man, what did I talk about there? What was I talking about? Like, I don't even know. And this is actually a good thing also to know for the coaches, that you may still teach the same concepts that you want your players to play, but in order to keep it fresh, in order for people to be more interested in it, you can just change. What you want to do. It's just the same as if we talk about strength and conditioning, and it's like you have an annual plan where you have a periodization, and you also have like programming where you choose in what exercises there got to be, and you can apply that to basketball training, to any type of skill training, to, or even if we take basketball training as far as team concept, you can teach the same concepts but in different ways. And also you can apply it to just like everyday life, just even record the any podcast that you want to do.
That's a great drop. Just being able to make sure like everything is always, and that's good, like you have that mindset where you're not coming in and just saying, okay, like let me just, you know, we'll just talk about this, even though we've already talked about it. Like you're actively thinking, okay, what's different? And again, that's why you're the GOAT, man. That's why you're like a silent mentor.
Thank you, Xavier.
All right, man, gonna let you go, but again, appreciate you for coming out, and definitely excited to have you on for the Academy, and definitely excited for what we got next, man.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Basketball and Barbells podcast. I really hope you all got major value from today's episode. Please leave a rating and review of the show, and don't forget to tune into the next episode.